1, 2, 3. You're very welcome to episode 7 of Meet the Brewer Online, hosted by ourselves here, Mother Max Public House in Limerick. I'm Mike McMahon, and I'm joined by my brother James. And this week we have Otterbank Brewing and Blending, and we extend a huge welcome from Limerick all the way up to Muff, County Donegal, to Declan. This is almost a podcast that didn't happen. We had some gremlins in the system, and we weren't sure whether Declan was going to be able to join us. But thankfully, we were able to iron them out very quickly. And here we have it, the live recording taken from Peggy's parlour in Mother Max.
Okay, let's kick it off, right? Because it's a beautiful day outside, and I think that we have 14 people on. I'm very surprised that we even have 14, given the beautiful sunshine outside. But obviously, that the 14 that are here really want to ask you some questions, Declan.
Happy days, Lynette.
I get to the bottom of Otterbank Brewing. So a huge welcome to Declan. For those who don't know him, he is the master of brewing up in Otterbank in Muff, Donegal. He drove the kegs and the bottles down last Saturday like a loon, just to make sure that they got here in time and they were all in good stead. So we thank him very much for that. He joined us for a cup of coffee and a cream bun, and we had a good old chat with him. And he's good crack, and we've some delicious sours this weekend from him. It's our second consecutive Meet the Brewer with sours, so don't feel any pressure.
No pressure here at all, man. So I just make beer I want to drink at the end of the day, like, to be honest.
Go back, and you're joining us with a beer house hat. I love it.
Yeah, man. And sure. Anybody that's sort of I do have a slight obsession with caps, like, and this is the newest one that I got there a couple of weeks ago. I actually robbed it off my boss, because as well as like fronting up Otterbank, I'm still the head brewer for the other belly down the southeast coast there as well. Just to keep myself on the toes.
So let's kick it off, right? So let's kick it off in Meet the Brewer style, right? Because as I said to you, we want to talk about you, not necessarily your beer. So I suppose tell us all about Declan and Declan the Brewer and how he got into brewing, maybe.
I suppose it all sort of happened a wee bit by accident. Like, I went over to university in Liverpool when I was 18 to do civil engineering. And fucking dicked about for the first 3 months, 6 months, as everybody does. Like, and Liverpool's such an amazing city. And I always remember that very first pint of cask beer that I had. It was a pint of Duker's IPA in the Philharmonic. And my mate had got it first. And I just looked and I was like, that's settling like a pint of Guinness. He's like, nah, mate, it's cask. I was like, great. He's like, it's me, but it's like, it's pale as shit, but it's like, it's settling like Guinness. He's like, well, yeah, guess I'll be sipping that. So like got it, like, I remember just looked at it and just went, I was like, oh my fucking God. I was like, that's amazing. It had all that mouthfeel and texture of a lovely fresh pint of Guinness, but it was really pale and sort of a wee bit fruity and stuff. I was like, man, that's brilliant. Like, because like all we got in the north was like Harp, Magners or Stouts or Smithwick's, like, and that was it. Like, that's what you grew up on. Like the first beer that we drank was, I think it was Michelob or something terrible. Like, that's some really, really bad Eastern European lager just because it was cheap. And like, yeah, it was just a big revelation tasting this first pint of cask beer. A couple of weeks after that, I got a part-time job then in a bar called Dr. Duncan's. It was run by the Cane's Brewery, which is unfortunately no longer an operation. It was a big, massive family brewer over there. So as I say, got a part-time job there. I was really fascinated with how cask worked. Like, one of their beers they had on was this porter that was on all the time. They had a raisin beer that was on all the time. I was like, this is amazing. I was like, yeah, still sort of interested in engineering in uni, but more and more interested in like how cask beer works. Was going into Canesbury then at the weekend, just volunteering, cleaning casks, pestering the brewer's head. Why do you do that? What's that you're adding there? Why are you adding it then? All right. And like, how come that happens then? Like, you know, and just got really geeky about Not so much beer at this stage, although beer was a part of it, more how they could reminisce, you know, this lovely beer that was in every single pub you went into. They had 3 or 4 cask engines. It was just amazing. And like, this was what I was a big proponent of cask then when I eventually moved back. Like, but was working away in Dr. Duncan's, like, started doing less and less in uni, started getting more into the beer side of things then. So we started homebrewing in halls in university. And like, we were selling these like ropey, like, we were like, and to be fair, no, we did start off, we went straight into all grain just because we had the contacts there, because we were working in Cane's. We were like, look, Like, I'd say the beers are getting a bit.
Who's we?
Oh, it was just me and a couple of housemates. Like, it was the other lads in block. So we were in halls, like right at the very bottom of Penny Lane. And like, there was two other guys in the floor below me. It was the guy who ordered the pint of Jukers. So a fella called Jack and another mate called Will. So like, we started making, and like, it was literally like, right, look, I can get the grain from Cane's. Like, we can get a bit of yeast in there. It's like, how hard can it be? Like, so like, we weren't even clean. Like, we've got new buckets and we thought, have it is, this is clean. And like, the first brew, we just brewed straight into it. Like, you know, didn't really clean it. Cause like, the lads weren't telling me about, like, you know, sterilization and cleaning at this stage. They were just telling me, yeah, look, just like, mix this with hot water and a pot, like, you know, stick it in the bucket, add this yeast, like, it'd be grand. So like, the first couple of batches were fucking bad, but like, we still drank them and we got pissed. Cause like, you know, you're 18, you're in university. I was like, you know, I didn't have like, you know, loads of money from your man dad or whatever. I was just like over there winging it and loving it. Like, it was great. And even actually our Hall's Bar, you know, pints were like 110. And again, they had lovely pints of cask. Like, it was just all, everything at that stage was just like, oh, we're just a cask revelation. It was unbelievable. Like, so like, as I say, like, that was a sidestep. Like, you know, the homebrew went on for a good while. I mean, it did get better. Like, but like, the be all and end all of it was, right, we need to get better so that we can sell more bottles, so that we can buy more pints of the time. So like, we weren't doing it for like, we were doing it for the sole purpose of buying better beer in Liverpool City Centre, like, basically, which is great. Like, so anyway, like, yeah, so battered away anyway at university, but all the time doing more and more shifts and Dr. Duncan's, eventually left there, went over to another bar, which at the time was called the Head of Steam, which was just on Lime Street Station. It's now, I think it's a big Wetherspoons or something though, you were in Liverpool, right opposite St. George's Hall there. But when I went in there, they had a beautiful bank of 16 cask full hand engines, and only three of them were in operation. So I took it on myself, like, right, want to get all these working, you know, I want to start doing festivals. Like, you know, we're right on the train station. Like, and what, it was also right underneath a halls of residence. Like, so like, I was in a big massive distraction, and it was great crack again. And like, we actually did, eventually get all the tasks sorted. The first beer festival we had was a fruit beer festival. So we had like 18 different lines of like all these different fruit beers from all around the northwest of England. It was amazing. And like, I think then the sort of, that was like 2 or 3 years after, you know, moving to Liverpool, then the sort of bug hit more about brewing. So an opportunity came up, like, I'd worked my way up from like, you know, barman to supervisor to managing. And then I eventually moved down to a wee rural part of Derbyshire called Belper, like really stunning, like right in the middle of a wee valley and all. And, you know, we were closed for 3 hours during the day, and I used to go down fishing, or we'd set up a hide out the back. And like, hopefully nobody's a vegan there. Like we used to shoot squirrels like on our lunch break and then skin them and make them into little Cajun squirrel sandwiches. Like, they were really, really nice. Like, it was actually really tasty. And like, yeah, so that was, I suppose that's the sort of time that I got really good into foraging and stuff. Like, cause we were sort of hunted to eat, and we sort of, they're growing loads of fruit and stuff to use in the restaurant or the pub, which is called the Fisherman's Rest. It's since changed owners a couple of times since then, but it was really far-thinking food and stuff at the time. And again, like, cask played a massive focus there. We started hosting loads of beer festivals. And again, I was volunteering at local breweries. One of those breweries was Dancing Duck, which we then went on to collaborate with when I moved to Dublin. So yeah, I stayed there for another couple of years. Then the times that I came were like, you know, I was really missing home. Decided to move back to Derry, was managed there for about a week because there was just nothing going on. Moved down to Dublin, and like, a very lesser known fact is I was actually the manager of the Black Sheep for about 4 or 5 weeks on Capel Street. Myself and Andy didn't really see eye to eye, like, so I ended up leaving there like for more or less as soon as I got in the door. But yeah, like with those five or six weeks I was there was great. Like, you know, I got to learn about Bure. I got to learn all who the heads were there. And then whenever I left the Black Sheep, I got chatting to Michael Kavanagh from who's now L. Mulligan Grocers and their L. Mulligan whiskey shop. So they had W.J. Kavanagh's on Dorset Street at the time. So when I worked for Kavanagh's then for a couple of years, got way back into the homebrewing then, because a lot of our clientele were, or our customers, sorry, were like, you know, we had actually David and Anya from Bog Copper used to be regulars there, who I eventually ended up buying the brewery off. And so it was, they would, you know, come in after their work and be drinking big bottles of White Gypsy American Pale Ale and talking about the dream of opening a brewery back at home, like, you know, Muff, which is where I was from. And then, you know, fast forward 7 years later and I ended up buying it off him. Like, He asked, like, you know, and then we had loads of the National Homebrew Club members were there drinking as well, and they really, really got me back into brewing. And I'm so lucky that I took that job, because, like, you know, it reignited the passion for brewing and stuff and getting back into beer. And again, the food offering there was phenomenal. So I was there for, I'd say, 2 years before Cabinets eventually closed. And, you know, towards the end of that, I was brewing more, was doing loads more with the National Homebrew Club. Eventually met Alex Laws of Whiplash. Myself and him decided to, you know, like, fuck it. You know, we do loads of homebrews. Like, well, we'll do a commercial brew somewhere. Let's ring around the breweries, see who the fuck is mad enough to let us do something, you know, a big massive beer. So I was doing bits and pieces with Brewbury at the time, with Trim, whenever it was their original founding members was there. That was, Jesus, 8 years now, maybe 8 or 9 years. So we did, yeah, it was like the first Whiplash Outer Bank collaboration called Ferami. It was a coffee and hazelnut stout. The hazelnut, unfortunately, didn't really come out. So there was a few issues in fermentation, but it was still an absolute banging stout. So that got released, absolutely vanished. Off the back of that, I got offered a job at White Gypsy. Alex got offered a job at Rye River. And that was the start of our sort of brewing careers in Ireland then. So I went down to White Gypsy, moved away from Dublin, moved down to work with Coulon at White Gypsy for a year.
And decided that you were parking company, and then you went where or what?
Did
you
do? Man. So
charging your own temple more.
And it was like, one of the things was like, you know, I was studying for my diploma in brewing through the IBD, and you know, I didn't really have enough time to study and stuff. And I was very friendly actually with Shane Long down in Cork. Like, you know, before I even started with White Gypsy, I went down there. I just said to Shane, Shane actually came into Cabinets one night, and I didn't know who the fuck he was. He was sat at the bottom of the bar, and the bar was empty that night. And this American couple were in, and you know, they were asking about all the different beers, and you know, what makes this one special? What makes that one special? You know, why have you not got Guinness? Blah blah blah. I was sitting there chatting away, and I was waxing lyrical, like, you know, about Franciscan Well. This was years ago before they were bought out. And whatever, like, the American couple left, and this fella from, he's like, you know, you spoke very well there, you know, that was great. He's like, here, get another pint. Do you want a pint yourself? I was like, no, I'm not. I won't have a pint, drummer. He's like, I'm Shane Long, by the way. I own Franciscan Well. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. It's like, nice to meet you. So I was like, look, I got chatting to him. I said, look, anytime, I'd love to come down and just work a week for free, like, just to see the crack down there. Because I'd never worked with keg beer before. Like, all the breweries I was sort of volunteering with over in England were all cask breweries. Like, so I was more nosy about that. Like, so yeah, I went down anyway 1 week and worked away, started everyone at 6, got to meet fucking all the lads. It was great crack, got to learn kegging. So whenever I left White Gypsy, I rang Shane. I was like, what's the crack, man? I was like, look, I've left. So I got a call in the next day from Nicky Lambert down in Wexford at Yellow Belly to say, you know, what's the crack? You know, we're starting a wee brewery in Wexford. Do you fancy coming down and having a look? So I was like, yeah, go on, sure, I'll go and have a look. So I went over. Lovely sunny day in Wexford, and I popped into the pub. He showed me around the brewery, and at this stage the brewery was in the basement of Simon Lambert and Sons. And so it was a 180 liter kit. Like, it was all, like, you know, fancy and semi-automated stuff, but at the time my homebrew kit was 250 liters. So I was like, all right, I was like, yeah, that's lovely, thanks. It's like, he's like, yeah, I sort of smirked. He's like, what are you laughing at? I was like, my fucking mash tun at home is bigger. And he's like, oh, so you'll be well able for this then? So I was like, yeah, I fucking would actually, fair enough. So he said, I hummed and had about it to start, but then I went away, and like the next day, I went down a few weeks later then with my mum and dad and my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, we stayed overnight, stayed in the hotel in the town, and, you know, went out for a meal and got a feel for Wexford and met the lads again and just fucking fell in love with the place, man. Like, everybody was so friendly. The weather is a good 6 degrees warmer than fucking Donegal. And the kit was lovely, man. It was like, yeah, I just got a really good feeling off the place. Like, so yeah, I agreed to go on. And one of the conditions was, you know, that I could still do a bit of brewing for Otter Bank on the side. And he was like, no fucking problem at all. Like, that's absolutely no bother. So yeah, I think like that was March 6 years ago, actually, just before Paddy's Day. And yeah, so Yellow Belly then has gone from, so that was 180 litres at the start. Within about a year, we managed to, Jesus, God knows how we got it down, but we got an 800 litre kit that we'd made ourselves. Like, and again, this is when the brewery was in the basement. And like, we'd measured everything to an absolute T so that we could get, you know, the biggest kit that we could for that size of a basement. Like, and We'd measured the insulation, measured the tank. Everything was great. Everything was made. This is like 3 months in the making. And it came to the day we were bringing it down into the basement. Like, it was about 5 mil too wide because Nicky had only measured the insulation on one half of the tank and not counted for the other half. So we ended up having to get a fucking, like, an angle grinder, like, angle grind off one of the supporting beams for the roof covering the stairs down into the basement, and, like, angle grind the bottom off it. And we were all taking this off and just looking at the roof, slowly moved that out. Like, very quickly but slowly lifted this fucking 250-kilo tank down the stairs and then welded the fucking I-beam back into place. So then we were on that kit for about a year. That's when we started doing our wee bottles of Four Corners. I think the first beers we launched was a strawberry sour and mild. There might have been a chili porter and something else, which by today's standards seems bog standard, but at the time was just, like, the best thing ever for us. Like, I keep getting pictures popping up on Facebook now, the memories. Like, I remember that space. It was about 7 foot, like, from the floor to the ceiling. And there was four of us down there, like, trying to bottle off 1,000 bottles. Like, and we sat, the first time we bottled, there was me, Nikki, Danny, Simon, Paul, the designer, like, in this fucking cramped basement. We stayed there from about 6 p.m. when we finished the brewing day, and they'd finished their barber, like, until about 4 o'clock the next morning, just for 1,000 bottles. Like, whereas now, like, that we've grown, we can sort of do that in about 20 minutes in cans, like, on the new equipment. Like, so I think it was after about, yeah, year 2.5, year 3, then we decided to move out from the basement up to a new site up on White Rock Hill, which sort of overlooks Wexford. And we bought BrewDog's old kit, which is very much a big old manual system. So it's basically, we've just gone from 200 litres to 700 litres to 5,000 litres, but with no automation. So it's all very much hands-on. And I've sort of brewed every batch, like, since the start. Whilst all the while then we had Otterbank in the background. And then 2 years ago, we decided, right, like, I can't really start playing around with all the wild bugs that I would like to down in Wexford, because obviously we can't risk any of the nice, clean, you know, IPAs and Citra Pale Ale and everything that we're doing in Wexford. Can't risk bringing in Brett or Lacto and Pedio and all that sort of those wild strains. So I was like, right. And at the same time, very coincidentally, Bog Hopper was selling up. And I was like, oh, daddy. Like, and this is like a 10-minute walk from my parents' house, just across the border. So I was like, I can't turn this down. So we were like, right, how the fuck can we afford this? So it was either buy a house or get myself in debt by buying a fucking brewery, like, no one. The ball like that it is, but, like, you know, it was a big passion of mine. And so I was like, fuck it, right, we'll fuck off the house for another 5 years or so and get the brewery. And so we started buying it in the August, and then we finally got our license to brew the day before the pubs closed. And I was like, oh, fucking brilliant, like, I just bought a brewery and I, like, every single pub in the country is just closed for the foreseeable. So we went, well, at the start, I decided, like, right, 50% is going to be mixed fermentation or barley, and 50% is going to be semi-clean beers for the pub trade. But then that very quickly changed to doing 90% barley beers, and then 10% will be quick turnaround beers. We haven't actually done any of the quick turnaround. Matrix is the first, well, it's the quickest beer that we turn around. That was still 5 weeks. We bought... On the first week that we got the license, I took in delivery of about 40 casks from the southwest of France. So there was a few Remy Martin barrels. There was three big, beautiful 600-liter Armagnac barrels. And they were hand-coopered by a guy in 1971. And they stayed with the same wee family Armagnac distillery up until the month before I got them. Like, and they want to feel the weight of them. They're beautiful. They're about 5 foot tall. So they came in. Then we got a load of red wine and white wine barrels. And so all the money from our first two releases went back into getting more wood. And the same is going to happen with these releases. And then we haven't got any more room left. Like, unfortunately, I'm not in the brewery tonight, because I would have loved to actually, you know, bring you around on the camera to show you everything there. It's like, I really, really want it to be like a proper cathedral of oak. Like, we've got a full stack of rum barrels, a full stack of port barrels. We've loads of Bushmills barrels. We've loads of mezcal, rye, pinot noir, chardonnay. The place smells amazing. We just filled our most recent barrels. We filled there was five first fill whiskey barrels. There's a new distillery opening down in New Ross, and they very kindly donated 10 barrels of ours that were just emptied there last month. And like, I filled all 5 the day before yesterday, and the brewery actually smelled like fucking whiskey. It's like, I managed to get 1200 mil out of 2 of the barrels as well, which is now chill filtering in the fridge. It's the perks, man. Oh, actually, nobody here is from revenue, are they? That didn't happen.
Pat O'Loughlin has just said, I'm going to be bleeping a lot of this out for putting it up.
Yes, this is redacted.
Yeah, right. There's two things quite interesting that kind of hit me, right? The first thing, you were talking about the bars. When myself and James viewed the building that we're in now, we viewed Mother Max, but it was called the Round House.
Yeah.
In the basement down here, there was old port barrels, which were about five or six feet high, right? Big barrels that went back as far as the 60s. And, yeah. And there was, I think there was six of them in here. When we viewed the place, like, we left and we were kind of chatting to ourselves. We said, right, there's 10 grand worth of barrels there, right? And when we bought the place and came back, the owner, the previous owner had cut them in half.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Because he obviously heard what we were saying and he was trying to figure out how to get them out. So I'm in a Hames home, right? And I suppose the second thing that hits me is that you were the third consecutive brewer on, right, and brewery on, that started up in and around lockdown.
I know, man. It's like, it's fucking mental. And like, at the time, it's like, there was sort of about a day of panic. It was like, right, that's just grand. The last couple months, it's like, oh, fuck, right. Well, if it doesn't, okay, fuck it, it's right. Our startup money is like, okay, that fella that was ringing you about barrels last week, I was like, fuck it, just ring it back and just spend. I spent stupid money, but at least then I knew, it was like, okay, if this does last a year, at least at the end of that year, now I'm going to have stock coming out. So like the single barrel series, like they are the first beers that have been fully aged in Muff alone. Like our other bottles, like I had little barrels sort of stashed all over the country, because obviously Otter Bank was started up as a cuckoo brewer, like traveling and using other people's equipment. So like they were all sort of blends of beers which were aged in various parts of the country, but these two single barrels are the first ones that are aged fully there. We also have just passed, so the 4th or the 20th of April there was when we filled our very first barrel in Muff. So that's nearly ready. That was one of the big Armagnac girls, like, but I think I might just give it another couple of months. Like, it's nearly there. It's beautiful, but it's just nearly there. Like, can't wait to see that, like.
And again, it's quite interesting, right? I suppose let's go back to the beginning. Where did the name Otter Bank come out of? How did you decide on that?
So I was born in Muff, and then we moved to like just over the border, like where we are on the border. When you open the back door of the brewery, there's a little stream 3 meters from the back door. That's the fucking border. Like we're that close to the north, and like So we used to be running up and down these roads like all as we were kids. So I was born in Muff, just up the road, but then we moved to Culmore, which is like on the Derry side of the border, but same distance. Then we moved back to Muff, then back to Culmore. So there's a little area in Culmore where we used to go drinking when we were totally legal. It was totally fine for us to be drinking. But it was just around like this, the head of a bay. So like we're on like a little, on the Loch Foyle, basically. We're out in the suburbs, but like right on the loch. And you sort of hop over this little wall and you sort of clamber around the beach. And it's like a little, just at the very bottom of a big meadow, like, and there was a big massive oak tree that overhang the water. And we sort of tied a swing up on that and we fires and just kept it nice and calm and away out of like not annoying anybody's fucking head. But every time, like the odd night, especially, you know, in the summer and we were sort of getting there around 8 o'clock when it was just sort of dusk, you would see loads of otters just sort of scamper and jump back in the water or back up into the field. And so otters sort of stuck in my head. And then I found out 10 years later that right opposite that place where we used to drink is actually called Otter Bank. It's over on the, you know, on the water side of Derry. So yeah, it just sort of stuck with me then, man. And then I was sort of talking to a few mates about that, like back when I used to skate. And like one of my mates is an artist, and then she sort of drew up this little otter's head, like with the fucking cheeky tongue sticking out and the two skateboards crossing by. I was like, that's fucking deadly. Like, so yeah, it's just sort of stuck then. Like,
yeah. I'm about to say right that there's a good customer of ours, Colin Healy, who isn't on the call right now, because when I was speaking to him yesterday, I just happened to mention to him that you have kind of a bit of a sailor's tongue. And normally he joins with his partner and their daughter. She's a little young for the sailor's tongue. So
if you had a save, man, I would have kept this at the watershed. Like, you know, I only would have started swearing at 9 o'clock.
No, that's fine. We want the full experience, right? Okay. Pat Fitz had a question there and he, earlier on, but we didn't want to interrupt you, right? And I suppose the question was in around cask beer. Why hasn't cask beer kind of made it over into Ireland or been as strong?
Yeah, so I think I sort of glanced over that very quickly. So whenever I started at Cabinets, we pretty much instantly we bought a beautiful brand new 5-handled Angrim engine bay, and we had 2 other engines either side serving cider. So like at any one time we had 7 casks on in Cabinets at the time. Like, it was absolutely phenomenal cask at the time, and at the same time Black Sheep were doing it, Against the Grain were doing it. It was a beautiful time to be alive. I think we just don't have that tradition in Ireland. Like in England, you have got all the family brewers and all the family pubs, and they're all tied to that. Whereas over here, we sort of had the market dominance of Guinness over the years. And like what started off as obviously cask Guinness then was moved into keg Guinness. And they've just been trying to streamline their products, as every single bar has to be absolutely fucking identical. And the magic of cask is that every cask is still alive and every cask will have its little subtle nuances. And like the big macro beer companies wouldn't really like that. And then like you don't have the art of cellarmanship really in Ireland either. Like I would have done a cellarmanship course over in England before being allowed to take on a really of our own. You know, and that teaches you about, you know, bringing in a delivery of cask. The temperature of your cellar has to be, the cleanliness, it has to be venting it at the right time, bringing it into condition. Like just making sure that cask is absolutely beautiful. I've just moved into a new house here in Derry, and the first thing I did was install a wee engine out in the shed and make sure its little jacket is on it and all. And I've got my little temperature proof. It's like cask is magical. I mean, I always think back to one of the pubs around was called the Fisherman's Rest, and like all the locals drank Pedigree. And like there was one customer there, this guy called Errol. He was about 68 at the time, and he could fucking tell within about a liter of how much was left in the cask, by how it tasted. Like even though when it was getting down to why, I was like, it's getting a wee bit woody there. Ah, no, there's a wee bit of the yeast coming in there. It's like, did you knock that cask there today? And he's like, oh, Errol, fuck off, man. It's like, yeah, does it taste good? He's like, ah, yeah, it doesn't taste great. Like, I was like, fair enough. Even you notice English people, they've got such a pride and how that wee pint of cask is kept. And we would have similar here with, you know, how perfect is that pint of Guinness? How hard is it to get a decent pint of fucking Guinness? Like, it's really, really hard to get a decent pint of cask.
Yeah, and it's something, right? Because I know here we were trying to do kind of a cask every month. We went away and bought it. We got a lovely cask engine in from the UK. And I suppose there was a nice little story on it. We spotted it for sale, and we sent an email to I can't remember the name of the pub. We sent an email to the pub, just basically saying, we're the pub here in Ireland. We were trying to get into cask beer, so we'd love to make an offer on the cask engine because it's kind of up for auction. And we got a decent reply from it. Basically said, if you pay for postage and packaging, we'll send it to you. it was really nice of them, right? It is exceptionally difficult to get cask beer in Ireland.
Yeah.
And to get, I suppose, proper cask beer in Ireland, because you can get a cask.
Yeah, I try to do cask installations and try to do training, but there was quite a high turnover of staff as well, in a lot of the bars, especially in and around Dublin and stuff. So it was hard to just instill it. You know, you can't treat a cask like a keg in a cellar, because you'd be going in and people would be saying, oh, there's not much left in this cask, and they'd be shaking it. You're like, you've just ruined that cask for 3 days. It's just never really took off amongst the publicans and the people over here, unfortunately. But it's not our fault either.
Yeah, there's a very interesting story we heard, a very famous story we heard of a cask producer who had come over from the UK to visit Dublin. And they were looking at bringing in casks into Ireland.
Aye.
And I won't name the pub that they were in, and the owner was very proud of how well they were able to manage casks and how knowledgeable they were. And the two guys from the brewery were there, and next thing there was a cask rolled across the floor. Under the bar counter and again, I said, is that normal? And they said, well, yeah, of course, yeah. That kind of ended any thoughts of a collaboration, you know?
Yeah, it's like the first half takeover we did with Yellow Belly as well. The first cast half takeover was in what was the Galway Bay bar over in the hotel? Alfie Burns.
Oh yeah, Burns. Yeah.
I'd say same thing. So we delivered on the Thursday. The event was on Saturday, so I racked the first cask on the Thursday, invented it for them and all. That was grand, but it sold out during the night. And then, all that cask is gone. We're just about to hook up the other one. And then about 20 minutes later, the same barman comes out, covered head to toe with fucking halves and beer. I was like, what happened? He's like, I don't know, man. It's like, I rolled that cask over, and I threw it up on the rack, and I vented it. And it's like, that's what happened then. So he's like, you upset and rolled the cask, and then you got covered beer. So, and then, I would always send, a wee card on top of the cask, just because I know that the train is not there where, and it's like, you know, this has to be set here for about 2 days or 3 days, or I'd always try and pop out, or at least go out and tell, this service is free, I will happily come out and show you, how to install the cask engine, how to pour it and stuff. But that's the same, if you ever want to do cask down there as well, I will happily rack off a wee 20 litre. I have a handful of 20 litre casks up here. I think 20-litre pins should be the way to go for Ireland. You'll tap it up on a Thursday and hopefully it's gone by a Sunday.
Great. So, okay, let's understand, right? Because, I mean, here you are, right? You're a head brewer with Yellow Belly, quite successful in Ireland, selling a lot of beer, and you're driving from Wexford up to Mull on a weekly basis at this stage to see home, but as well as that to brew in Otterbank. How does that work?
I do 36 hours down in Wexford and tried to do that on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but it was just absolutely breaking me when, so I did it now Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So yeah, drive back up to Donegal Thursday night, into the brewery Friday, Saturday, relax a little bit on a Sunday, and then drive back to Wexford here Sunday night to first thing Monday morning, man. I just keep going, it's absolutely breaking me, man, but if it wasn't worth it, I wouldn't be doing it, man. But it is really nice. It's I love being down in Wexford, and I have a massive love for Yellow Belly and stuff as well. And that's sort of paying the wages, to allow me to go and do what I really love, which is still beer, but which is wild and funky beer, and seeing what flavors I can get out of certain barrels and just experimenting, man. Because And don't get me wrong, we still do experiment a little bit in Yellow Belly, but not like we used to do back in the day, because we have got to that sort of certain size. And that's by no means saying we're massive. We're not. We're just really busy with the core range. And that's great, and that pays the bills, and the specials as well. But I do really miss, what happens if I just change this wee yeast strain here, or what happens if I change this hop here or whatever. We can't really afford to do that on that size anymore.
Would it be fair to say, Declan, that Citra kind of dominates your day with Yellow Belly?
Yeah, God, big time, man. And again, I feel really, really proud, because that was a wee beer that we worked on for 2 years in the basement down in Simon's. It took us 2 years to get Citra to where it was, and it's only sort of changed very, very slightly. The only change in the last couple of years is we've increased the dry hop, and we're sort of tinkering with the finings in the kettle. That's it. Citra used to be a clear beer, now it's a hazy beer, but that's just because of customer taste change and stuff. So yeah, again, I'm really, really proud, but I can now brew Citra in my bloody sleep. So that's actually where the tweaking came with I'm Home. I'm Home is a little tweak on Citra. So it's a twist on the yeast.
You've introduced I'm Home, right? Let's go up back up into your brewery. Right? Let's go up to Otterbank.
Yeah, man.
I know we can't see it, but we can't kind of walk. We can't walk around. But kind of explain just what makes it unique. I'm going to ask questions before you. So we had Sean from White Street 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about cool ships, and we were talking about Yorkshire Squares, and all that good stuff. So, I mean, you know, do you have a cool ship or a Yorkshire Square, or are you more fundamental than that, or what way do you operate?
So, like, I've been waiting on my mates to, like, bring me my bloody cool ship for the last 18 months. Like, but, like, the thing is, like, because he's not charging me for it, I don't feel like I can shout at him to fucking hurry up. Because I've now watched Kinnegar get their cool ship. I've watched White Street get his cool ship. And I've watched Tom, like, do two seasons of cool ship brews. And I'm like, come on, where's my cool ship? But, no, like, there's definitely a cool ship. I'm just pouring some of my homeware for myself as well. I was very kindly given that bottle, man. Thanks very much for that last week.
No, no fear. Yeah, Jesus, yeah, no fear.
So I got a cream finger and a free beer. So, so our brewery, I was very lucky that I bought the existing brewery from Ballcopper. So obviously the Mash Tun was there, HLT was there, all the kit was there. But obviously, the whole thing about me coming up to do this was that it was going to be a really funky brewery. So we obviously straight away introduced all the barrels. So again, we've got in and around 100 different barrels there now at the minute. And we straight away started working on our house yeast strain. So at the minute, that's a blend of Ardennes, which is a French border sort of saison strain, which is non-diastaticus. Which is blended with a little Brett strain called Suburban from America. And then there's a little tiny bit of lacto in there as well, which is a little blend that I've been working on with the Yellowbelly Castaway Lactobacillus for the last couple of years. So that's what it took, 4 or 5 brews to get where it's at now. None of the beers that have been brewed with that have been released yet. The first one should be out in about a month or two, I'd say. So they're going to be primarily funky as fuck saisons. Like, they're really good. Like there's like a real big massive punch of like all that fruity breath that you get, like, without that horse blanket, and a real nice tart acidic finish to it. Like, and again, that's what I said earlier about brewing beers that I like. It's like, I like super funky, like quite dry, just acid beers. Like, I really love that.
maybe tell us, like, okay, so you brew a lovely Castaway down with the guys in Yellowbelly. That would fall under the kettle sour kind of heading, yeah, right? And you obviously don't do kettle sours where you are. What's the difference, and what makes your beer so unique and so good, right? Because it is quite good, right? We're here drinking a Matrix. Out of can, because it's gone and
growing. Yeah, so I suppose the best way to explain my sour process would be with either of the single barrel series beers. So both Brandino Ice and Damson. So this would be like my way of brewing a Berliner Weisse. So it's based off the Mad Fermentationist book. So it's like a no-boil Berliner Weisse. So it would be like quite heavy. Like, again, I always use Belgian malt as well. Like, I'm always quite particular that, although Irish has got the best barley in the world, it's not, in my opinion, like, the best to sort of replicate those like historical styles of sours and stuff. So we use a really nice Belgian malt, and we always use Pilsner. So we would do like 75% Pilsner and then a load of flaked oats and a little bit of wheat. So we'd mash as normal. Well, I say as normal, we'd mash as normal up to the point that during sparge, I would actually add quite a few hops at this stage. So here you're not really extracting any bitterness, but you're still sort of getting the protective qualities from the hops, like, you know, the anti-spoilage sort of, and yeah, you're still getting like a little bit of flavor as well. So we used super low alpha Cascade hops, like, that were aged sort of like 4 or 5 years. Again, because I've been in Yellowbelly for 6 years, I've had the luxury of having a massive warehouse space where I was able to, get hops and put them into burlap sacks and age them up at the back arse of the brewery. Like, so we've got a load of Cascade Leaf, which only started off at about 4% alpha acid. So the alpha acid level is what, you know, gives you your bitterness that comes into beers. So with our sours, we don't really want that bitterness. Like, we do want the other properties of the hop. So we used a little Cascade in the mash, and we then had more of that Cascade Leaf in the kettle just to give us about 4 IBUs. So again, super, super low. If you look at Citra Pale Ale, that's about 23 IBU. So with our two barrel series, I've done about 4, so like barely even noticeable. Then, so instead of actually, you know, bringing that liquid down that we're decanting into the kettle, we don't do a roll and boil. We literally just bring that up to the boil and then cut it off. Because like we don't want to, like, you know, boil up all that protein. We don't want that all coagulating and dropping out. We want that to come into the kettle to allow all our bugs to have a little fucking feast and party on. Because like them eating those certain proteins that normally we wouldn't get gives off different flavors as well. So then that is racked into our fermenter. Then whenever we just shut it off and then start transferring. We don't let that rest or anything either. We're literally shutting off and then transferring in. Then we'll pitch. I'll pitch a little bit of normal ale yeast then just for like a day or two. Then I'll pitch a big, massive, healthy dose of lactobacillus, which will start to bring that pH down. The reason we add the normal brewer's yeast first is like that usually weirds itself out a bit. If the pH is too low, it gives off, again, flavors that I can't control. Whereas if we pitch the ale yeast first, then I know the fermentation has at least started and it's starting to split. And then we add the lacto. And then just then, before it's finishing, in the case of the barrel-aged beers, we'll rack in before it's actually finished fermenting, and we'll rack in with a big dose of Brett. So like it's getting a little bit of oxygenation when it's going into the barrel. So the Brett likes that, and there's still a little bit of our lacto there, which is acidifying, and we still have some sac, which is eating the sugar. So by doing that into certain barrels and there's still some spirit there, then all this weird concoction of like alcohol production starts giving off weird flavors that we've just been messing around with on the side for the last 5 or 6 years. So yeah, so that's our sort of structure for like our normal base sour beer. With basically, so a pils oats and wheat base, don't boil, and then rack into the fermenter, still sort of like fairly coagulated at normal temperature, then pitch normal yeast, then lacto, then Brett. So that's like our base for like our sour beer. Like. And then with the brandy barrel, so like we went straight in the fruit as well. Like, so like sometimes we would like age in barrels for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, then add fruit. But with these particular ones, because it was all still quite active and we were getting fruits really super fresh at the time. And to be honest, I didn't have any other beer to fucking transfer into barrels at the time. So like, as I say, it's like beer is equal parts science and like fucking situation and like, right, this is here now, what can we do with it? So like within about the space of 2 or 3 days, when this beer was just being ready to either, you know, age on in tank or rack into barrels, my mate in Belfast, Michael Kerr, rang me. He's like, "Deck, what's the crack? I've got a full damson tree here. It is absolutely brimming with fruit. Do you want it?" I was like, "Yes." So we managed to get, what did I get? I got 45 kilos of damsons off this one tree. And that was 45 kilos after destoning. So I went on the, it was like a Thursday morning, picked these 45 kilos of damsons into 4 big buckets, like drove the hour and a half back over to Muff. Like sat for 6 hours by myself. Like my mum was working late. My dad wasn't around. I was like, okay, this is all me again. So like these down 45 kilos of damsons, like put them straight in to the Sauternes sweet white wine barrel. And then racked that beer on top. Like, so there was still a bit of active fermentation there, which helped to macerate that fruit down a bit quicker. And it sat in there for 6 months, like in on the fruit. And then we racked off and bottled. And then with Jacinta, the brandy, up in my granny and auntie live about 3 kilometers from the brewery. And like my grand, thankfully, he's got like quite a bit of land at the side. So we planted about 40 gooseberry bushes, a load of rhubarb, loads of blueberries, loads of blackberries, raspberries, and we had some red currants. So we chopped all the red currants down. We got about 10 kilos and we put them into a Remy Martin brandy barrel, which is first filled in 1988. And when I actually got it, there was about a half a liter of brandy in there, which I was wanting to rack off. Like, and that's it in there for about 9 months. It just needed that wee bit extra because there wasn't as much fruit. And that's what's in the bottle there now. Like,
so how many barrels have you in the barrel series? I know they're single barrels, but how many have you running?
Honestly, it's going to depend. So like we will always taste each barrel before we decide to do whatever with it. Like sometimes a barrel will need blending, sometimes a barrel will just soup blending, But sometimes, in the case of these two, I was like, right, I taste these. It's like, I can't fucking blend these. It's like, that'd be a fucking sin. I was like, you know, it was like, you know, sometimes we'll blend the beer to match, or sometimes they'll match other barrels and stuff. But I was just like, oh, these are really good. Because initially, I was like, right, I'll brew these. Then I'll brew another beer to, you know, dial back that fruit, because the fruit additions were so high. But I tasted it, it's like, nah, these just have to go straight out. Like, this, yeah. And like, this is just to hark back to what Gypsy actually is. Like, I remember the, like, when Coudon had a sour beer in barrels, and he actually had a point, to be fair, looking back. He, like, I had a taste of it. This was the very first iteration of Scarlet. I tasted it, and it was absolutely amazing. But like he said, he's like, no, he's like, that tastes amazing to, so, like, you or other people who are mad into it. But any normal people drinking this are going to be put off sours for life. It's just too sours, too much. So like sometimes you do need to sort of scale it back a bit to, I suppose, appeal to more people. But like in the case of these, I was like, I don't care if nobody likes these. Like, I fucking drink them myself. Like, they're really
good. It's a very interesting point, right? So here is the question. Do you brew beer just for yourself, or do you brew it for the market? Or both?
Well, like, so far it's all been for me, man. I mean, like, the cans, I have only brewed into the format of a can to please the masses, as it were, because I am just getting told, you need a can, where's the cans? Have you got cans? So, like, I had to brew a can, but then it's like, right, fuck yeah, I'm not just going to do a normal session IPA. Like, it's going to have a little fucking acidic tart stamp of water bank on it. Like, so I sort of, that's a bit of both, I suppose. Like, normally, no, but like, sometimes you have to.
And just, I'm going to, okay, we had some lovely beers for you this weekend, right? So we had on draft, we had Matrates, and then we had I'm Home, and then in can, we have the Matrates, which is delicious out of the can. It's as good as the draft, okay. which is good to say, right? And then we had the two barrel aged that you mentioned, right? I didn't realize how these were just happening as you were dropping them down last Saturday. So I think did you label them Saturday morning before you brought them here? Did you bottle them maybe?
It's the keg. So I'm Home was that was kegged off that morning, like straight from tank. And then Matrates was brought. That was like, so Matrates was brewed over in Third Barrel. I went down there, took over the kit for the day. Because, like, the fucking mobile canners won't come anywhere near my brewery. I wonder why.
And just for the benefit of everyone to call, we discussed that 2 weeks ago with Sean. So Sean from White Street cans his own beer because the mobile canner will not come next or near.
Yeah, I know that.
Okay, right. So, I mean, you know, obviously there's some really interesting stuff going on up there, right? You're an exceptionally interesting guy. You know, you're a good crack to talk to, even just as we've been having conversations this week, right? You come across as being kind of quite laid back, but I don't think you're that laid back, are you?
I'm fairly laid back, actually, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, when it comes to fucking work and stuff, like, I'm obviously full on all the time. Like, I live, sleep, eat, fucking dream about fucking beer and breweries. Like, but no, I'd be fairly laid back, man. Anybody that knows me knows how laid back I am, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I don't know what to say. Sorry, we have a guest in the room with us tonight, right? So the buddy of ours actually sitting here, and he keeps it's quite funny because he's afraid to laugh because he doesn't want to be heard on camera. So he's kind of chuckling, and he's trying to keep his mouth closed. It's not funny, right? Okay, do you know what I'm going to say, right? That for me, right, I the Damson for me was absolutely just fantastic, right? I'm going to say I really enjoyed it. I had both of them last weekend, you know, fresh as they could be. I don't know, was it maybe I had an expectation around the cognac, and it was really good, but I thought the Damson was just that little bit better for me, right?
I'm actually loving the Matrates.
It's like, it was really interesting to brew as well, man. Like, we started it off with the wine yeast, actually. So it's the wine yeast chomps all the sugar and produces that lactic acid and keeps everything clean so that I can do it on a normal person's brewery.
But it's quite interesting, right? Because when we talk about sours at times, right, most of us are guilty of talking about what's called a kettle sour, right, which is that really kind of face puckering, you know, pull your cheeks kind of in, sort of your tongue is tingling kind of sour. Whereas when we're speaking to the likes of you and we'll say Landon Labour, White Street, you know, sour, even Kinnicar in terms of their funk farm, you know, a sour beer is something completely different. You know, it's more of the kind of that classic Belgian style, you know, dry, almost like a Kiev cider or sidra.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, I could get that from the barrel edge that you had, right? You can get that kind of sidra. It was really, really, really good, like, you know. And I mean, the aging process that's required for that.
Aye. Right?
And we kind of got into this 2 weeks ago. I mean, does terroir play a factor into the aging process and the effect? Like, so is muff in the bottle?
Like
County Donegal.
This would be more for Sean's place in White Street, because he's actually collecting wild yeasts in and around.
Yeah.
I haven't got to that stage yet, but our plan for our cool ship is actually designed to fit into the back of my van, and we also have another little 500 liter tank, so we'll be able to brew our beer, transfer it hot up to a location wherever, kick the cool ship out, rack the beer into it, and then cool it in a certain area and then bring it back to our barrels. So terroir will definitely play a factor there. But at the minute, like we're using them all from Belgium. I've got barrels from fucking France. I have barrels from Bushmills. I was like, we aren't as wild as a brewery as White Street and that are just yet, but we do have plans to be in the future. We're still sort of getting set up and, like, you know, I'm doing what I know how to do so far, which is barrel aging and blending. Like, I have no experience as of yet with all the yeast wrangling stuff that White Street are doing. So
you don't have a yeast dealer?
Oh, I've got a fucking yeast dealer, man. Sure do. Who doesn't have a yeast dealer these days, man? I've actually got a couple. I have a lad in the north and a lad in the south, because you can never be too sure.
Okay, Pat Fitz had an interesting comment there in terms of there was a beer brewed from yeast from someone's belly button. He was saying maybe a local one from Muff. I know that there was a cheese maybe a year ago made from Muff.
There's an Eastern European beer made from the old downstairs yeast there as well.
It's definitely a cheese, because I remember reading about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Let's open it up right to the group, because we've let you talk enough, right? I'm challenged. Anyone,
Knock,
do you normally go for a question?
Yeah, lining one up here, actually. As you know, I'm Mike. I'm a bit of a whiplash nonce, as described, on that beer group that I added you to. And I was looking up Declan there. You know, he mentioned that he knows the Whiplash founder, and I came across a funny tweet on Twitter. Said Declan Nixon is an arsehole, # yellow belly beer. So I'd love to know, Declan, do you know what that's about?
Is that from Alex, is it?
It's on the Whiplash beer Twitter account.
We have a lovely wee love hate relationship. it all comes from whenever I fucking touch Stalin in a special place on a ship to Copenhagen.
We're going to park that, right? Okay, move on next. The next question. Lachlan has a question there. He said, what was your biggest mess up that you've ever made? Yeah. What's the biggest mess you've ever made brewing?
Biggest mess up? Oh my God. It wasn't really a mess up, but it was actually super dangerous for the brewery in terms of contamination. Obviously, down in Yellow Belly, like, we're boiling 6,500 liters of wort, and to make Castaway, you sort of have your 6,500 liters that are all boiled. Then you pitch your lactobacillus, and you sort of need to keep it at a certain temperature for 24 hours. But there was actually, like, the elements failed, and there was a little hole in it which was leaking out the back of it. Like, so if we had to go and buy like 100 meters of hose to hook it to the bottom of the tank to take it that far away from the brewery, because we couldn't empty it, because we had to enter the tank to fix the element, but we couldn't have like basically a big 8,000 liters of infection sitting in a fucking tank ready to go.
That wasn't your mess. That was a
failure. Oh, yeah, it was a mechanical failure, like.
Yeah, that's an equipment. What's the biggest hames of a brew that you've ever made? Not mechanical. What's the biggest mess you've ever made? Not equipment.
Well, if I had like imperial stouts, like causing me to sleep overnight in the brewery for two nights in a row, like because it was stuck mashed, like that's pretty much my fucking fault. Yeah, the 2 tons will definitely fit in that thing. Yeah, no problem.
So have you ever had to pour a beer down the drain?
It wasn't even because it was bad, it's because like nobody fucking likes drinking English beer. I made an ESB a couple of years ago and it was fucking gorgeous, but like because Citra was selling so much, we didn't have enough kegs of it Citroid, so I had to enter the ESB down the drain to fucking clean them and fill them full of Citra. That's still a fucking touchy subject as well.
I
make a elderflower champagne every now and then, and I also brew a bit of beer on my own. But I can't remember if it's Mates Rates or I'm Home, but myself and the missus, we opened up and straight away bang elderflower off it.
I got a little gooseberry off it as well, actually, when I opened it. So like some other people have actually sold elderflower. I think it's because we kept the hopping so low, but we used Pacifica, which is like quite high in aroma. I think it's coming from that, like, and the little funky wine yeast.
Yeah, well, no, it's definitely a bang of elderflower. This too has got off it straight away, but I don't normally like sours, right? I honest to God, myself and Mike have had a conversation about this a couple of times, but I'm liking the Mates Rates and the old I'm Home.
Cheers, thank you very much, man.
Just as a question from Adam, what's your dream beer to brew? And before you answer, I'm gonna ask, right? So just to add to that, so what's your dream beer to brew? What is the most expensive beer you have ever brewed or are going to brew?
Oh. So the most expensive beer I've ever brewed was for Yellow Belly. It's not released yet either. So it had 350 kilos of triple chocolate chip cookies, which we got the local bakery to bake. And it has 200 kilos of marshmallows. And it's also will be dry hopped. It was about 125 kilos of Citra. And it was about 3 ton of malt. And like revenue is going to get a massive fucking hit because it's going to be about fucking 12% as well. Like, so that is literally the most expensive beer I've ever brewed and ever seen on paper. It's mental. And the second most expensive beer we just brewed last week, but I can't say anything more about that.
You can't just bring down the lead there. So just, I know that question coming in there from Jason in terms of collaborations in the pipeline. Have you had any collaborations in the pipeline this summer with regards to summer?
Yeah, man. So we did a collab 2 weeks ago with Wicked Wolf. It's a peach and mango sour, kettle sour, actually. It's one of the first kettle sours that did it up with Wicked Wolf. Other collaborations. Oh, fuck. This is really, really good, too. So whenever there was that wee break in quarantine zones, Stone Barrel came up to brew a wee cheeky beer. So we did a big, massive, which what will be a black IPA. So we basically brewed like a black beer base, which went into whiskey barrels. And so half in whiskey barrels, half in red wine barrels. Then it'll be coming out and being dry hopped. But we decided the beer that's in the red wine barrels is too good to be dry hopped. So only the whiskey barrel half is going to be dry hopped as the black IPA. And the other half is, it's like a really, really rich. It's if it like, the other way, there's a Flanders Red and a Flanders Brown. This is like a Flanders Stout. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
It's really nice. There's like all that red, deep, like blackberry, bramble fruits. And there's like a really nice hint of cherry. But like you get a wee hint of roast at the back and then a wee hint of it's just, it's hard to describe. It's so nice. Like, so there's only 2 barrels of that that are getting blended and bottled as is. But like, oh, they're gorgeous, man. But like, me, Niall, and Kev have all tasted it, and like not one of us want to actually put it on the market to sell. Like, so.
I've got a question from John McCarthy. Then John Noel, I go to you, and then Hugh, I'll go to you. Okay. So John McCarthy was actually asking. Oh yeah, sorry. Who's Danielle?
So every time a barrel is filled in the brewery, it gets christened, and Danielle is just one of my cousins. So it just happened to be a day I was filling loads of the same white wine barrel, and Danielle, Sarah, Rachel, and Emma all got filled on the same day. So just cousins.
That's okay, 100%. John Noel, over to you, pal.
I wanted to follow up on your question about terroir. And by the way, I'm drinking this. I'm home. I'm new to sour beer as well, and I'm really liking this. So thanks for that. But my question is, okay, so you're using some ingredients from the continent, and I was just wondering whether you think, nevertheless, that the local microbes or the climate affects the beer anyway. And if you had, for example, used those same ingredients in Belgium, would you get a different beer using the same barrels and the same technique?
I suppose it depends on what you're letting into the beer, because like beer can be quite a closed and sterile process. So if I was making clean beer, like it wouldn't really matter where in the world I was. I suppose like in Wuff, like unlike in Wexford, we use an RO system to treat our water. So we're stripping every last thing out of it. Whereas in Muff, we're not treating the water. So like at the minute, that's about the only terroir thing that we're doing. But again, whenever we move into using our cold ship and, you know, doing white beer, then it will start coming back up with terroir again, because we're using those, you know, we're using the bugs in the air to ferment our beer. But I think if I was doing, you know, closed circuit brewing, as it were, it wouldn't matter where in the world you were, if you get me.
Just in terms of closed circuit brewing, we're talking like the likes of like the macros.
Yeah, pretty, like even not just normal brewing, as it were, as in, you know, like once it goes from the kettle, it's going into a conical fermenter, you know, it's under pressure, and then it's, you know, going into kegs, and it's all kept away from the outside environment and using normal clean brewer's yeast. Like, whereas we are still wild and funky, I don't have a cold ship up in Ireland yet, so like I'm not allowing any of the local environments to affect my brewing, if you know what I mean, apart from the water. So like I love terroir, and I think it's really fucking super important. And like I suppose like again, well, like all our fruit and stuff, like it's quite important that it's all local. But terroir will play more of a focus in our brewery in the next couple of years as we develop and settle into our roots.
Okay, excellent. John, that I think it covers that for you. Hugh has Hugh has a three-part question. So hang on. Okay, I remember one, you remember one, and Anthony remember the other. Okay, let's go first with you.
Those things, yeah, look, they're pretty easy to remember, so hopefully we can go crack onto them. But anyway, but first one really is like a lot of the lads, I think I had a bad experience with sours, probably Mother Max actually a few years ago, you know, and being put off of them, too sour, like puckered lips, as Mike said.
That was about you. No, you were above the Wickham tap. That was Galway Bay.
And I like saisons, and I like a bit of funkiness in my beer. It's not like I'm not against it. I'm just wondering, apart from kind of maybe staying away from the kettle side of things, is there any other way, tips in negotiating sours? And you can think about it for a little bit. I'm going to go into my second part of the question here, right?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you can answer that first, so go on.
Do you mean as in, like, how could you tell how acidic something is going to be? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, well, I don't want anything, like,
you some don't of them want are so sour that
I could only drink maybe even just half a glass, you know, and it's enough for me, and that's about it. But, like, some of them are just absolutely beautifully flavoured and mild, just the right amount of tartness, and I'm just wondering, is there a science behind it?
Can I ask you, is the real question here, right? Because obviously the ones that you didn't like would have been kettle sours, so they're kind of like an artificial sour, whereas the ones you did like, or the ones you are liking right now, are the mixed fermentation, which are done over a bit of time. Is that fair to say? Is that kind of the question?
definitely. But like even on that, I think there's still some elements of their variability in it. Like some of them are extra tart, even without the kettle.
You'll notice that like there are quite a few breweries who will actually just add food grade lactic acid to finish beer in order to get the pH down and get that perceived acidity. And like that is just literal heartburn in a bottle. Like, so they'd be really, really bad for you. You also notice as well that a lot of the back sweetened sours as well can be a little bit heartburny. So it's just sort of knowing which breweries or which blenderies or gooseries or whatever are, you know, how they're finishing their beers basically. And it gets a lot down to personal preference as well, because like, so what, some people will need a packet of Rennies in hand for, other people will drink by the gallon. Like, because like there's a few breweries that I can't drink their sours really, because they will just go straight from my gut. Like, it's just down to personal preference and just researching how they're actually soured. It's like, as Mike says there, like, you know, a lot of the proper mixed fermentation and long aged sours should be perfectly well balanced and, you know, just perfectly nice. Like,
fair play. Yeah, thanks very much. And you know, I actually have issues with heartburn, so like sours for me is just like whack heartburn. But the stuff you made that is absolutely delicious, so fair play.
Yes, thank you very much, man. Cheers.
Second question,
real ale. I love real ale. Yeah. I'm from Wales originally, and you know, it's kind of been, you know, drinking it since I was, before I was legal and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's really easy, really light, flavorsome. I just don't get why it's not here anyway. But
yeah, man,
is there, you said there was like there isn't a scene here in Ireland, we all know that. Is there a scene over the border in Derry?
Ach man, like there used to be a scene in the south, but it sort of fizzled out. And there used to be a brilliant scene in Derry. Like, we had two Weatherspoons bars here and they both closed there a few years ago. So we used to have, there was six engines in one and four in the other. And like, because it was the cheapest thing in the bar, it was what all the sort of local alcos drank. So it was always kept in fine fettle and it was always turned over. It was amazing. I was heartbroken when they closed. So nah, no cask in Derry now, man, apart from my house.
And then the third question is, are you planning an Otter Bank branded baseball hat range?
Yes, I am, man. Again, like, because I'm not in the brewery, I've got a whole wall of baseball caps, but there will be merch. Once I stop spending money on bloody barrels, man, I'll spend it on t-shirts and baseball caps.
And a nice website and social media. And
that's it, man. Yeah. All that stuff.
Are you hiring a social media manager?
Are you looking for a job, are you?
We have young Vincent Gilulli, who's not on the call. You know, who is real, he does exist. He's not a
big, you know? Yeah, so it's like, I know fine well I need to sort all that stuff out, man. It's like, I've been meaning to update the Instagram, even with all the beers I've done, and sure, all it's up there, so it begins. It's like, I don't have time, man, and it's like, I know everybody's like, but sure, it'll only take you 10 minutes to do the Instagram, but it's like, it's only 10 minutes after a fucking 12-hour day in one brewery or another brewery, or driving 6 hours there, or making sure my ma's all right, or, you know, trying to find a girlfriend.
Just ask you, I mean, I don't want to say it's a one-man brewery in terms of Otter Bank, but how many of you are actually involved, or how many are actually brewing, or
Just me, man. Yeah. Then on the bottling days, like, my mum, dad, auntie will come down and help me bottle. But yeah, it's pretty much just me, man. Just me.
My God, it's very lonely up there in Muff
on your lungs. It's grand. Like, to be fair, it is actually nice, because like I'm only 20 minutes out to the beach, man. So like, you know, after a day, like, I will go the long way home. I'll go 45 minutes in the wrong direction to go to a beach and sit and chill out and then go home. It's nice, man. It's nice being up. My family's on the upper road. Like, the guy who does my labels is three doors over. Like, for people, we get all our safety gear is next door to the right. Excuse me. And there's a couple of offices. It's nice. Like, I don't mind.
Someone
else is doing the day.
Derek Kenny's on the line. He said he'd do your Instagram for you. I assume he works for beer. If you work for beer, Derek.
Yeah, yes, like I'm going out with his cousin.
No. You know what, right? We saw him coming in and we knew we didn't know the face, right? With a beard like that, we should have known.
Yeah, Yeah, I unfortunately work for BrewDog down in Dublin, Dublin Outpost, and I just recently just did my Cicerone exam. And I just found out that I passed my Cicerone exam, the level two part of it, which was about a 4.5 hour exam. So I said, I'll just do anything. I haven't worked since December, so I'll do anything right now at the moment just to get a bit of, just to get a bit of knowledge in my head as well.
I'm sure I could find something for you to do. But...
clean pegs, clean barrels, whatever you want to do on the floor.
I have a few jobs there. I'll talk to you after that.
Yeah, you can come up to Derry and Limerick, man.
Shoot me on your number, right? So we don't fear. We get
I'll put my phone number in the chat there.
Do you? Yeah. I assume you don't want payments.
Just beer. Beer's fine in payment. Beer's fine in payment.
Apprenticeship. Oh good god. Okay, right. Adam is asking just where does the union stuff come from on the bottles? Or where does the union stuff on the bottle come from?
Is he on about all the little taglines like on the bottle? Yeah, you'll see on the main sheets there as well as about
unmute yourself, Adam, and ask the question properly.
Sorry, Declan. It was just because you had the join a union I tagged you on this already.
Joined the union on our first days.
Pork butcher. My grandfather was a pork butcher, both presidents of the Pork Butcher Society.
I think I was chatting to you online there. Yeah, it's like I'd be a fucking big old fucking socialist version on Tommy at heart, man. So it's just like we've got a fucking tiny platform to fucking say one wee tiny thing on a label, we'll fucking do it. Like pretty much it, man. Like if we want people to join unions, we want the workers to unite.
Just so Anthony is sitting here in the background, he's laughing away, right? He's against the unions. He works for a large corporate company as a union buster. I don't tell you what he did. He almost spit the beer back into the glass and said he can't have that. Anyone else got questions? Pat Fitzerson, he remembers you from Cavanaugh's. Pat, to be fair, is big into cask beer and is big into his beer in general and has travelled a bit like to taste beer and
you always sort of laugh at people talking about the good old days, like, but see those couple of years in Cavanaugh's, man, it was so fucking crack. See watching junior doctors coming across and trying to drink 3 pints. A fucking Weston's Old Rosie cider is hilarious. I miss those days, man. And because we used to do a thing where, again, because I just moved from Derbyshire, like, and there's a Derbyshire Brewers Collective, which was like a group of 32 breweries in and around Derby. So I just got back in touch with them. It's like, well, what's the crack of Steglin? Look, we're running a real ale bar in Dublin. We've got 7 engines. We're doing about 7 casks a week. Like, is there any chance you can send some over? So it was like 32 casks on a pallet. So they sent 32 casks over. When we were done with them, we sent them around. Then a handful of the breweries, then to fill the casks, then the back over to Derbyshire. It was brilliant. We did that 3 or 4 times. Like, and then all of a sudden, as quickly as it happened, fucking cask was gone again. Nobody cared. It was weird.
Pat is just asking, has Brexit had an effect on you in terms of Otterbank?
Yeah, you'll notice these three bottles aren't waxed. I can't get wax from Britain anymore, unfortunately.
Not
even to Northern Ireland. But...
yeah, that's been a problem for a while, actually. Around Christmas in particular, there was a lot of the breweries that we were dealing with in terms of the box.
Yeah.
That's how we first got introduced in terms of Otterbank.
Yeah,
they couldn't wax the
box. Mad. They just stopped overnight. Like, that's like,
but it was funny because there was a certain brewery we were talking to, and they wouldn't release the bottles because they weren't waxed. We were waiting for them to put them into the box to get the boxes out. And I remember actually asking it wasn't the brewer I was dealing with, it was a person in the admin department there. And I said, what effect does the wax have on the beer?
It gives you a bit of a longer shelf life. It keeps more of that oxygen out there.
Come here and tell you, these have been drank in days. Like, this was Pyrenees, right? Send them down, right? The wax, in fact, is just going to slow you down getting into it, right?
To be honest, man, it looks like, because, like, I was looking to, like, and I fucking hate doing this. Like, about once a month, I'll have a wee flick through on Untapped for the crack just to send myself fucking insane, like. But the amount of people crying about the wax, like, I was like, that's like, they just fucking go over it. Like, just take it off.
We've been asked here, are there any plans for an oatmeal stout or a porter from you?
So 3 years ago, we did a stout. It was 9.9%. So it's like on the empty side, it's called Prep Rock Stout. And like, that was done in peat and wire barrels and aged for a year. And like, it's one of our most asked about beers that we've ever done. And like, I actually found a case there when I was moving house, and like, it's even gotten even better. So in about 2 years time, that will become our only core beer, but it's going to take 2 years for that stock to be built up and then to keep on doing. So we've got like a load of Pinot Noir barrels in, and we've been filling two fills now, but it won't be ready for another few months. But that will be our oatmeal stout, as it were, but with a difference, obviously.
The guys and girls in Crew Brew, so Crew Brew are here in Limerick City. They're kind of like yourself. They kind of kicked it off just before the pandemic.
I've been hitting them up on the socials.
Yeah, they're on the call. They're asking. Well, I'm wondering, is a rhetorical question. Any collabs planned here with any breweries? So is it
funny, man? Like, ever since that we tripped down to Limerick to drop these down the bottles and kegs, Trasa there was saying she'd love to come back down to stay for a weekend. So if you put us up and feed us, I'll come down for a collab, no problem.
So who's that? That's the Crew Brew.
That's
Crew
the Brew, right, yeah.
You want to put up Declan and feed him? You know, he'll come down. And now, and the only reason Anthony is sitting here, Declan, right now, you met Anthony last week, right? You met Anthony, and Anthony was here.
I seen it. I was like, are they having a fucking lock-in in there, are they?
he's only here, he said, because he wanted to see you again, right? And so he's in the room.
Big fucking charmer.
Yeah. he actually said you ate his cream bun. He wasn't very happy with
it. Was that cream finger hiding at the bottom of his, was it?
There's going to be technical difficulties on this one as well, I think, in terms of the podcast.
I say you may fucking cancel it. Don't be sending it out, man. I'll give you a safe for work version tomorrow.
And the recipe for Darren, do you want the recipe for Yellow Belly Saison? Where's Wallanona? Is it?
I just want pallets and pallets and pallets of it. I swear to God, it's the best saison I've ever drank in my life.
Okay.
Sorry, I just love it. I was trying to buy six cans. It was brewed 2 years ago, so that's why.
I was going to say it's Keith McCarthy on the call, because I think he was supposed to be on earlier on, but actually he doesn't represent Yellow Belly anymore, so that's the end of that.
He represents fucking Otterbank, though.
Okay, Crew are saying yes, it's a done deal. You can stay in the house if you don't mind sleeping on the couch.
Sign by.
Okay, Hugh is a quick Hugh. Go for Hugh.
So last week, White Street had, you know, the lads there had they were quite opinionated on IPAs. Mm. What's your opinion on IPAs? Do you think they're like just, you know, we all know Owen Nocton here is a massive fan of really strong IPAs.
I'm just wondering, like,
are you an IPA man?
So just before they can answer, right? So just in terms of opinion, right? If you just in case you didn't do your homework and listen to the podcast, Sean hates IPAs. They're the devil, right? So there you go. You discuss.
Well, like, IPAs and lagers are the money spinners for breweries at the end of the day. Like, if you look back at our brewing record for Yellow Belly, you'll see the first year there were no fucking IPAs. There was nothing fucking dry hot. I was very much a malt forward, big, ABV, juicy, not juicy, chewy beers. Like, it's only listening to the general public, Kirsten, that we started doing IPAs. Like, so IPAs definitely do have the place. Like, everybody wants them. Everybody wants to taste what the new hop is, like, taste what this does to a different beer. Like, so they do have their place. Like, so you'll notice now there'll be another few versions of Matrix coming out, which will be very, like, they'll be basically sour IPAs showcasing different hops. I'm not the biggest fucking hop head in the world at all. But I do appreciate a well-made beer. If it showcases off a hop, like, I like it. I don't like all these, like, you know, super fresh, grassy, fucking double APAs. Like, I'm not a big double APA fan, really. Like, I like tasting APAs if I can taste that, oh, this is Citra, oh, this is Simcoe or Mosaic or whatever. But no, I wouldn't be as militant as Sean would be against them, but they can take a back seat as far as I'm concerned.
But he still brews them.
So, yeah, there you go. That's it. I don't fucking like them, and I still brew them. Don't like double IPAs, just don't fucking brew them until you like them.
Oh, good. I've actually lost my chair when trying to talk. Okay, I actually, sorry, I do remember what I was going to ask. Right, so we've had two consecutive Meet the Brewers. We've had mixed fermentation, two consecutive Meet the Brewers. We've actually probably had some of the nicest sours that are out there for almost nearly 3 weeks almost. And I suppose I want to ask a question just to the group that are here, right? Just, and it's just to help myself and James here a little bit more. What's your opinion of sours now that you've had mixed fermentation, aged, proper sours versus, I suppose, the quick kettle sour? Are you more in favour of sour, or are you less in favour of sour, or do you remain unchanged? And it's just a general. Anyone want to take that one up? No.
I only speak for myself there and say that I enjoy the proper sours, the kind of the ones that are kind of designed for flavour rather than kind of the acidic side of it, you know, I don't understand them. I don't understand why would someone want to make something like that. But when it comes to what Declan is making, that completely makes sense to me. And it's like the next step up in the kind of saison. It's kind of like more funk, more kind of tartness. It makes sense, you know? So I like that. So
yeah,
more
yeah,
of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally agree with you, Hugh. And I think Owen, you're going to pipe in the same as well. I was never a fan of sours, but after this afternoon and the last couple of days, yeah, I'll go again.
Yeah, I'm never really a big fan of sours. I don't know. I must have had a terrible one before, but the one in the barrels or in the Remy barrel was lovely. That, like, as soon as you open it, you just hit with this like unbelievable fruity nose on it, really. And I guess I had one there the other night from, Jesus, what's the name of it then again? I can't think of it.
You had a picture up of it, yeah. It was Vocation.
Vocation, yeah. Fucking unreal. Unreal. Like, it was a sherbet. I think it was a sherbet double sour or something. It was like 7.2% or something like that. It was lovely.
Yeah, and there's comments coming in, right? And I think we're quickly changing people's opinion on sour, right? But I just want to say I'm not anti sour, I'm not anti kettle sour either. I think there are nice kettle sours out there. And White Hag Puka was being mentioned. I quite like that, but I like sour drinks anyway, so it's really down my street. And probably my favourite sour is kind of the Otravez from Sierra Nevada.
Oh, that's fucking amazing.
So it's. I think there's horses for courses as well here, right? So it's not. I don't want to have an umbrella for everything, but I just wanted to kind of get a general understanding of what people think, right? John Noel, you were up next. You have a hand up there.
Yeah, in connection with this question about sours, and a few times ago there was the question about high alcohol beers. So I'm wondering about you guys trying to sell sours over the bar, would you do it in pint glasses? This seems like a very refined beer to me, something that deserves a wine glass or something. So
we'd always offer, no matter what it is, no matter what the beer is, it's always offered in half pint, two-thirds and a pint. I think that there are it's interesting, right? I have a tendency, and James is kind of the same, we go for halves or two-thirds on most beers. And it's not because we don't fancy a pint, but it's just that
we like, sort of it.
Well, we like to change. We like to swap around. So, you know, you'll have a half pint or two thirds of it. It's still nice and cool. It's still the way it should be. It's nice and fresh. You can always get another two thirds. It's not a big deal. But there are people out there who just love the idea of having a pint in their hand, and there's nothing wrong with that either. Like, that's just, it is what it is. Could I drink a pint of this absolutely delicious Mates Rates? I could see myself doing it. Yeah.
Right.
The only thing, and I think, John, to your point, is it might go a little warm as I drink it, so I'd have to drink it a bit quicker than I normally would.
I was actually thinking more from the publican's point of view and the business end of it. Can you sell beer to your normal clientele? That's a bit, you know, it's not, well, to me, maybe I'm off track, but this isn't something that you go for drinking pints on Saturday night. It's much refined.
You find like a lot of the sort of craft bars would have like a sort of like a loose rule that they'd only serve sours in 2/3 glasses. Like,
yeah.
Some sours are designed for pints. Like, I would say Matrix, I would definitely hop off by the pints, but the two Farrell bottles, maybe you're right with the wine glass though. That's why I always drink out of a little wine glass.
So I suppose, John, we'd actually just give the option. Like, if someone was getting a beer and they didn't know what they were getting, we'd say, look here, this one is a sour. Do you want a pint of it? Do you want 2/3? Do you want a little taste first and see? Do you know? So it just kind of...
But I suppose just... I hope I'm getting the question right. I think sometimes, John, there's a difference between being out on a Saturday night and going for a drink on a Thursday night, if that makes sense. So it's kind of in your headspace what way you're, if you're going out for, and I don't want to say a session, but you're going out for a night out versus you're going out for a few drinks. I think if you were going out for a night out, you mightn't go for a pint of sour, or you mightn't go for a sour. But if you were going out for just a few social drinks midweek, or you know, you probably would go for the sour. So I think you're right. Right? I think sometimes what dictates and what mandates in your own mind what drives that is, what am I drinking when I go to the next place? You know, because if you start on something absolutely wonderful and beautiful, as Owen said, like QVC, Mates Rates, right? It's, you know, what do you drink next, right? So sometimes you find that people will come in knowing that they're going to visit a couple of bars, and they stick to something safe and something consistent that they can get throughout the evening. We don't have the versatility in terms of craft beer bars in Limerick City at the moment. But there are some good bars. There are some good bars that do have some good craft beers. You know, so I mean, just even around from us, there's a couple. You know, so the options are always there. I hope that answers the question. Okay. Someone has come here, Dr. John. Oh yeah, John Greenwood. Sorry, that was the blind pig. You keep Gaviscon in the bar. You did. You just keep it in the fridge, so you get a shot of Gaviscon if you're feeling unwell.
Can I say, I'd love to do a sour beer festival up above, sponsored by Rennie's, man. It'd be hilarious.
I just jump in there if you. I met you years ago, and it only twigged when you started talking about Cask and Witherspoons, and I remember being shocked talking to you about what you were saying about Cask and Witherspoons at the time. You know, I'd been in England myself when they were never known for Cask at the time.
Aye.
You were so passionate about them, Kevin, as I remember you going down the cellar on a Monday and Tuesday night trying nearly to force stuff for me to drink, like, you know. You used to be quiet up there on a Monday and Tuesday, very quiet in Dorset Street, like,
yeah, it was, man. That's Pat talking, is it?
It's just amazing to sort of halfway through this video call to realise who you are and where it's come. Fucking fair play, and you make great beer. Like,
no, serious. Thanks very much, Pat. Yeah, actually, I remember your face, man. There was quite a few people. There's only a handful of people I used to run downstairs to get samples for. But we would always have a few casks resting and ready to be tapped up. Because like, I always thought it was brilliant meeting somebody who was actually fucking into it. Like, I was like, yes, brilliant. It's like, here, will you taste what's next? Will you taste what's next?
I think it's the way beer should be, you know, and good session beer. You know, cask leads to good, low strength, quaff it all day stuff. Like,
yeah,
you know, too, so,
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, yeah, nice to see you again. Okay?
You're on. Cheers, Pat. Thanks, Pat.
All the best. Good luck.
Can we get some cask in Limerick for Crew House and Mike? Okay, we can. I'm going to say, why don't we park that one, right? Let's wait and see when we're up and running. We can talk to Declan then, because you know it's
fucking pubs aren't open yet.
I would say yes, right? And now, yes, with a big caveat on it, right? With the 20 people on the call here tonight, we can sell cask beer.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, they're £2 each.
Yeah, well, there you go, right? So it's economics, right? But when you take a cask in, sometimes it's very hard to shift it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You need to have 10 lads like behind it who'll have 3 or 4 pints.
So, I mean, I think like a cask fest, the lads and crew are sending us to a cask fest. All of this is it's wonderful ideas, right? 100%. I think there'd have to be an element of support first. Because
yeah, it's like I would 100% even set up. I have enough engines here to set up a bloody festival. I've got about 20 engines down the Verde. But like you need to have like a core set of like, you know, a core group of people drinking it. Like, and like once you have that, like you'll notice yourself, like once a keg comes on that's popular, it just vanishes. If you get a decent cask on and you've got people on, you know that it's going quick, then you'll turn over. But
beautiful, right? So on that note, right, I'm actually going to say I want to say a huge thank you to everyone for joining us. As always, without you and without you drinking the beer, this wouldn't really be happening, right? Declan wouldn't have a job. We wouldn't have a job, right?
Thanks for being everyone. It's great to talk to everybody. Yeah.
I want to... Anthony wouldn't be here. Anthony wouldn't be here yet. I want to say just a massive, massive thank you, right, to Declan.
Anthony
right?
Going to show himself at any stage?
No. Look, he's topless, right? Look, let's just as he's wearing shirtless, okay? He heard that Declan was coming on shirtless, and he said, shirtless too. Right? So, look, we'll just leave it there. I'm not discussing it this late or evening. Right? So, I genuinely just want to thank Declan, right, hugely. Right? All week, we've been having a bit of crack on social media. We've been texting back and forth, right? And it's all been about beer. The beer tonight, like, and this weekend has been immense, right? It's been absolutely fantastic. And I hope that everyone here has enjoyed us, and everyone else who couldn't be with us tonight has enjoyed us. And I mean, I really think that we're going to kind of second Meet the Brewer in with good quality mixed fermentation beer. And I think, you know, the quality of it does come true. And, you know, we joked about Sean earlier on and his passion for anti-IPAs. I mean, Declan has a massive passion for mixed fermentation and sour beer and good quality sour beer. You know, so obviously if you see it, support us, because, you know, without everyone here supporting it, as a style of beer, it's going to die off again, right? It's going to go backwards. You know, so support those that are supporting this style of beer, I think.
Cheers. Thanks a million, Mike.
You know, and other than that, if no one else has any other questions, I'm going to wish you a very, very, very good night. And hopefully tomorrow will be absolutely fantastic in terms of sunshine. Keep an eye on social media. I have never smoked in my life, but tomorrow morning from 10 o'clock, I will be smoking in my backyard.
Yeah.
I feel like a teenager going
in behind. Older, is it?
Going in the back of the shed doing it. I said this to Pat Fitz earlier on, right? I really do. My cat has been locked upstairs in the room away from the for fear of what might happen. And I'm going to do a leg of lamb and a beautiful, beautiful chicken, right?
Gorgeous,
why am I doing both of those? I haven't a clue. It was just what I got today, right? On that note, right, we do thank you, right? We really, really do. We've enjoyed today.
Yeah, thanks so much for the invite, folks. Like, and say, like, this time next year, when I've got new beers, I'd have you come back. And so whenever we do a proper Meet the Brewer down in Limerick, man, I'd love to come down.
Definitely, 100%. We'll have you back, right? And I know the lads and crew will put you up that weekend. How about that?
Yeah. Right, go on. Love you.
So, if I left and said, talk to you soon.
We've reached the end of this episode of Meet the Brewer. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Declan from Otterbank Brewing, to thank all those who contributed on the evening, those who bought the beer, and those who supported. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen, and I look forward to welcoming you back into Peggy's Parlour for our next Meet the Brewer, which will feature 4 provinces, and we'll have a good chat with Fergal. Till then, stay safe and enjoy good beer.